Hi there, boys and girls.
We're certainly glad you're with us today because we have an exciting story to tell. I mean, Uncle Dan does. It's adapted from Holy Scripture as found in the Old Testament, Exodus chapters 13 to 19.
And this one I call
Dangers in the Desert.
Back in the days when mighty kings called pharaohs ruled Egypt, there lived a race of slaves called Israelites. They won their freedom through the efforts of a man named Moses. He persuaded Pharaoh to let the Israelites leave Egypt to worship God. But Pharaoh did not keep his promise and took after the Israelites. Through mighty miracles of God, the Israelites were able to elude the pursuing Egyptian army. The great multitude of Israelites now stand on the eastern shores of the Red Sea, having just crossed on dry land. Triumphantly they stand ready to march on toward the promised land, the land of Canaan. Moses raises his ever-present shepherd's rod, gives a command, and once again the freed slaves are on the march, guided by the pillar of cloud. The scene about them was mostly dreary, desolate mountains, barren plains, and the sea stretching far away, its shores strewn with the bodies of their Egyptian enemies. Yet they were full of joy in the consciousness of freedom.
I will sing unto Jehovah, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and my song, and he is become my salvation.
For 3 days they marched without finding any drinking water. As the supply they had brought with them was exhausted, there was nothing to quench their burning thirst.
I want a drink, Mommy.
You poor child. It's a crime, that's what it is. Moses bringing us out here in the wilderness to die of thirst.
Don't blame Moses. He's following the pillar of cloud the same as we are.
Well, it's his fault. I wish I had stayed in Egypt. At least my children wouldn't be crying for water.
Just have faith. Everything will turn out all right.
I want a drink of water, Mommy.
Just be patient, my darling. Somehow your mother will get you a drink.
Here, listen. Water! Listen to the people. There's water. Springs of water up ahead. At last we can quench our thirst.
Men, women, and children in joyous haste crowded to the springs. Suddenly a cry went up.
Stand back! Stand back! The water's bitter! It's not fit for drinking! Stand back, all of you! Stand back!
The water's bitter!
We can't drink it!
I'll die of thirst!
Just be patient, sister. Moses will find a way.
Moses! Oh, he brought us here purposely to kill us.
Die of thirst!
See? Everyone blames Moses for bringing us here in the wilderness to die!
In his grief at the distress of his people, Moses did what they had forgotten to do. He prayed earnestly to God for help. In answer to Moses' prayer, God showed him a tree, which when Moses had cast into the springs, the water became sweet, and the people drank. Next, the Israelites camped at Elim on the border of the wilderness. They camped here several days before venturing into that hot, dry, sandy wasteland. When they had been absent exactly 1 month from Egypt, they made their first encampment in this wilderness.
Mommy, I'm hungry.
So am I. When do we eat?
Right now. Everything's ready, so gather around.
All right. Quiet now. Quiet. God of our fathers, we thank thee for the blessings of this food. We thank thee for thy love and care and protection. Amen. Be seated. All right, Mother, start the lentils, please. Odessa, you may start the hominy.
There is no hominy.
What? Why, I thought it was understood that hominy was to be a regular evening meal dish.
It's all gone.
Why don't you replenish your stock?
I tried to, but there's none in the general storehouse. In fact, they're just about out of everything.
What are we going to do for food? We'll get hungry.
I'm not as much worried about us as I am the cattle. There's no grass or herbage in this wilderness. How can we possibly feed our huge flocks and herds?
We can't. They'll die.
And when they die, we'll be that much shorter of food.
We'll die, too.
I wonder if any of you realize how much food it takes every day to feed 1 million people. Over 1 million.
Don't make it sound worse than it is, Ulam.
How much, Ulam?
I don't know, but tons and tons of it.
And the storehouse is about empty?
There's very little left. Nothing of some food, so they told me.
It's very serious, all right.
Eliab, why don't you say something? Don't you realize the seriousness of this situation?
Of course I do. But what is there to say?
Well, how are we going to eat once all the food is gone?
Well, I don't know. It's a serious problem, all right. I didn't complain too much when we were faced with the pursuing Egyptian army, or even when we ran out of water, but this food situation is different. I don't like to see our children go hungry, and I simply cannot understand how Moses expects to feed this vast multitude traveling through a wilderness.
Well, I think he's brought us out here to die of starvation.
Aren't we forgetting the mighty miracles God performed in our behalf on the shores of the Red Sea?
Even God can't supply food when there is none, Ulam.
Nothing is impossible with God. Anyway, we haven't yet suffered from hunger. Our wants so far have been supplied.
Yes, but it's a future, son, that I'm worried about. I simply can't understand how Moses expects to feed this multitude, traveling through the wilderness where there's no food.
Doubts began to fill Israel's hearts. Even the rulers and elders joined in complaining against Aaron and Moses.
I speak for all the people when I say, Moses, that it would have been better had we all died as slaves in Egypt. There, at least, we had plenty of good things to eat. Here, we starve. Our women and children suffer. You have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill us with hunger.
Moses' reply to this accusation and complaint was simple and to the point.
People of Israel, you have forgotten to trust in God.
No, we haven't.
You've forgotten your bitter service in Egypt.
Moses, how?
You have forgotten the goodness and power of God in your behalf when he delivered you from bondage.
We realize that.
You have forgotten how God spared your firstborn when the destroying angels slew all the firstborn of Egypt. You have forgotten the grand exhibition of divine power at the Red Sea. You see and feel only your present trials and inconveniences. You think about and talk only of the hardness of the way and wonder when your pilgrimage will be over. But the Lord has heard your murmurings, and he still loves you. He shall give you in the evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full.
At nightfall, the camp was surrounded by a vast flock of quail, enough to supply the entire company. In the morning, the ground was covered with a small, white, seed-like substance.
What is it?
Looks almost like snow.
Perhaps it's the bread Moses promised us.
He did say that in the morning we'd have bread to the full. I'll taste it and see if it's bread.
No, no. No, before we even touch it, we'd better ask Moses. I noticed lots of other people headed for Moses' tent, probably for the same reason. Come along.
People of Israel, the substance on the ground is manna, food put there by God's angels. It will be there every morning except the Sabbath day. You will gather each day about 3 quarts for each person. On Friday mornings, you will gather twice as much to last you over the Sabbath day. Prepare manna as you would wheat,
and the taste of it will be as wafers made with honey.
From that day onward, for 40 years, Israel never lacked for food. The manna was always there every morning, except on the morning of the Sabbath. After leaving the wilderness of Sin, the Israelites encamped in Rephidim. Here there was no water, and again the people distrusted the providence of God. Again they came before Moses, complaining and demanding water. At the command of God, and before the assembled multitude, Moses smote a rock with his rod, and immediately there gushed forth from the rock a stream of water. And the children of Israel did drink, and their thirst was quenched. A new and unexpected danger suddenly confronted the Israelites. The land through which they were now traveling was inhabited by a strong and warlike people called Amalekites. The king of Amalek was not ignorant of God or of his sovereignty and power, yet he chose to defy God and to fight against him.
Long live King Amalek, great and mighty king of the Amalekites!
Arise, gentlemen. You are all trusted officers in my court. You know as well as I that our nation has never been considered one of the great nations of earth. We are scarcely even known beyond the borders of Egypt. That, gentlemen, will soon be a fact of the past. Soon Amalek will be the most powerful and greatest nation on earth, a position now occupied by Egypt.
Long live the king! Long live the king!
How are we going to accomplish this? By a very simple process. We are going to defeat the Israelites, former slaves of the Egyptians. Do any of you have an idea why defeating the Israelite slaves will make us great?
If we can destroy Israel, it will prove that our God is stronger than their God. People fear and respect Israel because of their God. Once we prove our gods are even greater, then people will fear and respect us.
Even Egypt will. Our positions will be reversed. We will become great. Egypt will become weak.
Long live King Amalek, great and mighty king of all Amalek.
Long live the king.
General, I want you to formulate a plan of attack against the Israelites. Report to me in the morning. And you, Prince Kaleum, I want you to assemble all the people. They will take an oath to our gods to destroy the Israelites so that not even one of them remains.
With our gods so solidly behind us, Israel's God will be powerless to resist us.
Yes, General?
I have formulated a plan of attack against the Israelites, Your Majesty.
Yes?
I deem it wise, Your Majesty, to take it a little easy at first.
What do you mean, easy?
Well, Your Majesty, we've heard many things about the Israelites and their God. We know not what is true and what are lies. We have never had contact on the field of battle or off the field of battle with these slaves. So I suggest, Your Majesty, that we try to incur their anger. Try to get them to attack us in our strongholds, or at least in places of our own choosing. Otherwise, we'll have to attack them in the open, along their line of march. Now, once we feel them out, know their strength and weaknesses, we can attack and destroy them at will.
Do you know how to incur their anger?
Yes, Your Majesty. We will attack and kill their old men and women, and those who are faint and weary. Nothing will make their leaders more angry than that.
They keep the women and children and old people segregated from the others?
No, Your Majesty. Just those who can't keep up with the others. They bring up the rear, taking their time, catching up with the main body of marchers after camp is made in the evening.
You plan on nibbling away at the enemy?
At first, yes, Your Majesty, with your permission.
Brilliant plan, General. Permission granted.
It is through this territory, occupied by these fierce and warlike Amalekites, that the Israelites are now passing. At the rear are those who are old and lame, and all others unable to keep up with the main body of marchers. Moses, of course, is at the head of the long column, leading his people. Suddenly, Joshua, a young man high in the council of Moses, pushes his way through the marchers and excitedly greets Moses.
Greetings, Moses, sir.
Joshua!
Moses, sir, the most terrible thing has happened, sir.
What is it, son?
The old and weary people in the rear have been pounced upon.
What?
It just happened, sir. I rushed to tell you the minute I heard about it.
Who did this?
The Amalekites, sir.
All those in the rear were killed?
Some of them may have survived, sir. I haven't checked yet.
We must get to them quickly.
Aaron, stop the people. Make camp right here. Miriam, get your young women in their bandages and go to the rear immediately. Joshua, you come along with me. Your young women are very efficient, Miriam.
Thank you. What are we to do with the injured?
They'll have to be carried until they recover enough to walk by themselves.
Yes, sir. I'll have litters made.
Joshua, what do you think of all this?
We should avenge these dead and wounded, sir.
Well, I wasn't referring to that, but since you mention it, you do believe we should take measures against the Amalekites.
Most definitely, sir.
But we aren't prepared for battle. Our people are just a group of men, women, and children with no training whatsoever for war.
But, sir, we're on the right side, and right always prevails.
Does it, Joshua?
Yes, sir.
You're sure about that?
Doesn't it, sir?
Well, sometimes evil and wickedness seem to prevail, and perhaps it does for a time, but in the final end, right and justice prevail.
But then we will make war on these Amalekites?
Well, have you thought it over? Thought of an actual plan of attack?
Yes, sir. Robust and healthy, ambitious and fearless young men should be chosen from each tribe and led against the Amalekites.
But Joshua, fearlessness and brawn don't win battles, you know.
No, sir, but... Sir, you are one of the greatest military geniuses of all time. And you must know that the enthusiasm and energy generated from belief in the cause for which one fights is a substitute for training and experience, and frequently does bring victory.
Sometimes.
Well, then too, sir, God is on our side. And with God on our side, we cannot lose.
Joshua, my son, choose as many young men from each of the tribes as you deem necessary. Tomorrow, you will lead them in battle against the Amalekites.
But, sir, I'm not a military leader. I have no training or experience whatsoever.
But you do have faith in God, my son, and you rely completely upon Him. There is nothing that better qualifies you for any position or task in the world than that.
Early the next morning...
Everything's in readiness, sir.
You know where the enemy is camped?
Yes, sir. The scouts reported back with complete information. And, sir, there is a hill nearby from which you can watch the battle.
I'll take Aaron and her with me. We will pray while you and your men fight.
Yes, sir.
So Moses, Aaron, and Hur stood on the hill nearby, with arms outstretched toward heaven and holding the rod of God in his right hand. Moses prayed for the success of the armies of Israel.
O God in heaven, I beseech thee to give Joshua and his brave young men success. Avenge the wrong done to our old men and women and the weary. The Amalekites sinned a great sin against thee, O God. They have desecrated thy holy
precepts. Moses lowered his right hand, and immediately Joshua and his men began to lose. It was soon discovered that as long as Moses kept his arms outstretched, Israel won. But when they were lowered, the Amalekites won. Aaron and Hur
supported the arms of Moses until the going down of the sun, when the enemy was put to flight. The terrible thing that the Amalekites had done was avenged. Not far distant from where Israel was now camped was the home of Jethro, the father-in-law of Moses. Jethro had heard about the marvelous things that had happened to Israel on their way from Egypt, and now he set out to visit them and to restore to Moses his wife and two sons.
How soon will we see Father?
It won't be long now, son. Just be patient.
Moses was informed by messenger of their approach, and he went out with joy to meet them. He had sent back his family when on his way to the perils of leading Israel out of Egypt. But now he could once again enjoy the relief and comfort of their society.
There's nothing quite so comforting in this world as a wife. A good wife and children. And home, the proper kind of home, is a spot of heaven right here on earth.
I love you, Moses.
And that very thing, love, is the ingredient from which a real home is made.
From what we've heard, you love the Israelites, every one of them.
Yes, Zipporah, I do.
How have you been getting along with them, Moses?
Fine, Zipporah. They're wonderful people.
We heard that they've complained, that they even rose up in rebellion against you.
Oh, they have, I guess, but they didn't mean it. They're like little children, easily discouraged and hurt. But they forget quickly, and they forgive quickly, too.
You know what I think, Moses.
Hmm? What?
I think you're the greatest leader, the greatest teacher, the greatest and most loved man that God ever created.
From Rephidim, the people continue their journey, following the leading of the pillar of cloud. Often, as they had traversed the sandy wastes, they had seen before them rugged mountains like huge bulwarks piled up directly across their course, seeming to form a solid wall against further progress. But now as they approached, openings here and there appeared in the mountain wall, and beyond, another plain opened to view. Through one of these deep, gravelly passes, the cloud now led them. It was a grand and impressive sight. Between the rocky cliffs, rising hundreds of feet on either side, flowed a living tide as far as the eye could see. The host of Israel with their flocks and herds.
It's a beautiful view. Mountains, valleys.
But mainly people. People as far as one can see. People on their way to freedom, to the land of promise.
Before them now appeared a majestic mountain.
What mountain is it?
I don't know, but it's the most impressive and beautiful mountain I've ever seen.
Why, it's Mount Sinai. Sinai, the mountain of God.
The pillar of cloud came to rest on the summit of Mount Sinai, and the people spread their tents upon the plain below. Here, at the foot of Mount Sinai, was to be Israel's home for nearly a year. The dawn next morning gilded the dark ridges of the surrounding mountains, and the sun's golden rays pierced the deep gorges, seeming to the weary Israelites like beams of mercy from the very throne of God. On every hand, vast, rugged heights seemed in their solitary grandeur to speak of eternal endurance and majesty. Here the mind was impressed with solemnity and awe. Here man felt his ignorance and weakness, acknowledging the might and justice of God.
I will praise thee, O Lord, with my whole heart. I will be glad and rejoice in thee, for thou hast maintained my right and my cause. Thou hast destroyed the wicked, but thou hast not forsaken them that seek thee, nor forgotten them that love thee. I will sing praises unto thee, O God,
Lord of Heaven.
Here, at the foot of Mount Sinai, Israel was to receive the most wonderful revelation ever made by God to man. Here at Mount Sinai, man was to receive the law that was forever to be the basis of human conduct and the foundation of all civil laws and behaviors. Here, God was to make manifest his character. Here, by his finger on tablets of stone, God was to write the Ten Commandments.